Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Play Like a Girl podcast, one of the shows for SB Nation's Ohio State site, Land-Grant Holy Land. We are two girls talking about sports because our opinion counts too. I'm your host, Meredith Hine, and I'm so excited, as always, to be joined by my co-host, Tia Johnston.
Hello again.
I mean, let's just get into it because this past weekend was simply unbelievable with the results from the NFL's divisional round of the NFL playoffs.
Where do we begin? if you guys could see our show notes, there's just like 70 bullet points of just like everything that we need to hit from over the weekend. Okay, let's just start off with like the biggest headlines, which is Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers not playing in the AFC or NFC championship for the first time since 2010. That is bonkers.
So this is such a fun little piece of trivia, and I know I'm giving it away in the show notes. However, we're still going to play this game of, did you know who the four quarterbacks were in 2010, the last time that it was neither Tom Brady nor Aaron Rodgers featured in this game?
No, I did not until I read your show notes.
Yeah, this was Brett Favre for the Vikings and Mark Sanchez on the Jets.
Like, I have no idea about anything related to the NFL past, like, or pre, like, 2012. I'm going to be totally honest with you. So this just feels like a really long time ago.
I mean, it was. So it wasn't so long ago that this was when Brett Favre was also on the Packers, for example. But what is memorable to me about this game was this was the NFC Championship where Brett Favre was like dead on the field playing for the Vikings. It was after he had his whole fiasco with the Jets. It was the source of that like SportsCenter commercial where they're like, he's coming back. But yeah, like this is just in terms of linear time, this is a long time ago since Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers were not in these respective positions.
I mean, for as long as I have been watching the NFL religiously, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers have always been the best. I mean, you throw Peyton Manning in there, and that's pretty much what I remember as far as growing up with the NFL. I know that we're going to get into this later, but I really am just so glad to see four new quarterbacks in the championships. But most importantly, I am so happy to see two new quarterbacks in the Super Bowl and not Tom Brady. I love the guy. We're about to talk about that. But like, it's just so refreshing.
It absolutely is. And, you know, we'll get into this now, but not only are we're going to see some new quarterbacks. We're seeing one dusted off quarterback, which I kind of love. But not only is this an end of an era in terms of kind of this championship caliber teams led by Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, it also might be the end of an era in terms of both of their careers.
I really do believe that about Aaron Rodgers. I think he's done. I think he should have retired after last season. He's causing way too much of a ruckus, like, outside of football. And I'm not being like, stick to sports. I'm saying, like, he is distracting from everything that his team is trying to do. I think he either needs to retire or he needs to get out of Green Bay. I don't think that him and Green Bay mesh anymore. And then the Tom Brady conversation, like, I don't think he's done. I really don't. I think we see him in the Super Bowl, if not next year, then the year after.
Yeah. What's so interesting, and I completely agree with your take on both Rodgers and Brady, but what's so fascinating is, yes, they both lost yesterday. They both lost yesterday over the weekend, excuse me. They both lost in extremely close games, and both Rodgers and Brady have been playing still at the top of their respective games. Yeah. Like, there's a reason that the Bucs and the Packers were able to win playoff game. Well, not the Packers. The Packers had a bye. Like,
right.
The teams that they're leading are still good teams, but you're exactly right. The dysfunction that Rodgers has caused in Green Bay, even before last season even started with kind of his drama of training camp, you know, it feels like he certainly, if he continues his career, it will not be with Green Bay. Like, Brady is a little bit less dramatic. It's just sort of like every year he just keeps becoming the oldest quarterback to do X and continuing to do X, whether it's throw, you know, his millionth touchdown pass or whatever. Bless you, Ruthie. Ruthie just sneezed. Excuse me. But yeah, it's hard to imagine Brady hanging up his cleats after this year, and especially being such a competitor, the way that, you know, the game ended on Sunday for the Bucs. It feels like he's going to want that one back.
Like, if you think about it, he won the Super Bowl last year, and I mean, is in the playoffs this year, and we're already talking about, like, oh, is he done? Like, if your standard is not winning the Super Bowl, like, you're probably still a pretty good quarterback. And we would not be saying this about younger quarterbacks, like, I guess we can throw Carson Wentz out of this conversation, but we're not talking about Super Bowl winning quarterbacks the following year about their career being over. Yeah. And I know age and all that. And he's definitely hinted at, oh, that's the other thing I wanted to talk about. If in his post game press conference and they're asking him and he's like, I haven't put any thought into that. I'm like, that is, quarterbacks need to quit saying that, because of course you have. You know exactly what you're doing. I don't care what you say. You know exactly what you're going to do next year.
Yeah. Additionally, there's the fact that, like, despite apparently not wearing sunscreen, he does not seem to age. What the heck?
Well, yeah, that's
wrinkle-free at 43 or 44 or whatever he's at. Anyway, last favorite Tom Brady moment of the weekend. So there was a lot of talk last week about the fact that Tom Brady actually does not get that many roughing the passer calls called in his favor. And he actually has had a fair amount of unsportsmanlike conduct calls. He had another one on Sunday, Tia, and I don't know if you saw it, but he was like, he got like hit in the chin by Aaron Donald, right? And he was like pointing at his chin and he's like apparently bleeding and he's mad at the refs for not calling it. So he gets a personal foul for unsportsmanlike called on him. But then of course someone posted the meme of nobody makes me bleed my own blood from dodgeball. And I could not stop laughing.
Twitter was on a freaking roll all weekend. I mean, like, whatever your viewpoint is about Aaron Rodgers, the way Twitter came together to roast that man, I was like dying. I could have stayed on Twitter probably all night, every single day this weekend.
Yeah, I have to be off of Twitter, but it was so phenomenal. I get the tweets when they come to Instagram.
That's a good filter, I feel.
Anyway, that's a high note to end on with Tom Brady. But let's get into what was the story, at least of the first three playoff games this weekend. And that was, what a week for kickers. The first three games all ended on walk-off field goals. So Tia, who I know you love special teams more than anyone else in this world, why don't you talk us through it?
I know that kickers like have one job, but that's why it just makes me so mad that when they do miss, I mean, they are just written off. But then the next day they can come out and kick a game winning field goal. And now they're like their fan base's favorite player. And it's like, what's that quote where if you want to be with me when I'm hitting my game winning field goal, you got to be with me when I'm missing the ones that don't really matter, or even the ones that are losing games. I mean, first of all, I love all of the storylines behind these three kickers, though. Did you see the quote that, I have it pulled up, that Evan McPherson said before he went out and hit that?
Oh my gosh, what swagger.
He said, so Joe Burrow said that Evan McPherson told the Bengals bench, it looks like we're going to the AFC championship game, as he walked out to kick the game-winning field goal. Like, that is so badass.
Wow. It feels like Evan McPherson, aka Money Mac for all of you Bengals fans, and Joe Burrow might be best friends. I don't know.
Joe Burrow's best friends with everyone.
Yeah. I would be best friends with Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow, if you're listening, please be my friend.
Absolutely.
No, but I mean, it was perfection. But the storylines continued. Robbie Gould, you'd want to talk about like disrespecting a kicker. In San Francisco's evening game on Saturday against Dallas, he was literally warming up while the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders were performing around him because they would not let him complete his warm-ups properly. And so there he was, just...
This
picture is so funny. It looks like they formed a tunnel around... Like, the cheerleaders formed a tunnel around Robbie Gould.
Yes, and I'm sorry, but, like, the man is at his job. That is his job, and he needs to get these reps in. And I know that the show is great and for the fans and everything, but, like, come on. Kickers, that's what they need. They need reps. Had he not done his pregame warm-up, would he have made that final field goal? Who's to say?
Yes, and I'm so sorry. That was actually from last week's performance of San Francisco versus Dallas. But regardless, as Karen from Mean Girl says, still just an incredible, just incredible ice in his veins. And sticking with the San Francisco theme, you know, Tia, I'm not sure if we talked about it on the show last week, but we knew that the three opposing coaches remaining in the NFC playoff picture were all younger than Tom Brady. Additionally, did we talk about this last week? Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur.
No.
And
it's wild.
Wait, did we really not?
No, I did not realize that.
Oh, well, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, and Matt LaFleur were all like on the Washington football team coaching staff years ago together.
Oh my gosh. Like, going back to Tom Brady's youth, like, I always forget how old Tom Brady is, I guess.
This is the real life. It's not that Sean McVay is the hot young coach anymore. It's that Tom Brady is simply elderly.
No offense to Sean McVay.
Yeah. But anyway, we are seeing this rise in young coaches. Kyle Shanahan is incredible. It's also fascinating to see that, like, he's winning in San Francisco with defense and, of course, special teams. Robbie Gould, thank you so much. But, you know, I just can't figure out if Jimmy Garoppolo is actually a good quarterback, Tia. I really don't know.
I don't think that he is. However, I heard a take from somebody that I kind of liked where they said he's a really, really good locker room guy and the whole entire team is behind him. And I think that's really underestimated with a team's success. If there is no chemistry, no matter how good your quarterback is, like, for example, the Eagles with Carson Wentz, there was so much locker room drama and it was all in the media. This isn't a secret. I don't know if that was Carson Wentz's demise, if he's just not a good leader, but it can't help. So I just think that Jimmy G is a good guy. He's a good teammate and he's not bad, but I don't think he's winning these games. Like, would he be as successful without Elijah Mitchell or George Kittle or Trey Lance? I mean, is their future. So I don't know if Jimmy G sees that as the writing on the wall, but I don't think he's all that.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, it certainly helps to have a coach like Kyle Shanahan who cut his teeth, you know, as an outstanding offensive coordinator. If he's calling your plays, he can make the Cleveland Browns offense look good for a period of time. He can make anyone look good. So maybe that's a little bit of what we're seeing. But yeah, I completely agree. Having the locker room behind you makes such a difference. I mean, I say as though I was once an NFL quarterback in a locker room. But yeah, I mean, you know, when you have other leaders on the team too in San Francisco, which I think sort of makes up for, and by leaders, I mean like outstanding elite players. Like, you do have George Kittle at tight end. You've got Nick Bosa. And when you have outstanding players on both sides of the ball, do you really need an elite quarterback? Traditionally, like in the Super Bowl, you know, yes, you'll have guys like Joe Flacco win on occasion. But yeah, you have usually needed a complete team, including a quarterback, to win. But we'll see this year. Which brings us, of course, to Matt Stafford. So when I mentioned earlier, like, the young quarterbacks / the dusted off quarterbacks, is this finally his time?
Yeah. I mean, if you told me that this was going to be the guy who beat Tom Brady this year, like, I would not have – I'm sure Lions fans' mouths have dropped as well. Poor fan base. I feel so bad for Detroit. But, like, again, it's going back to, like, the Jimmy G thing, like – and even the Aaron Rodgers thing, where I just think he needs to get out of Green Bay. I just think if you're on the right team and you mesh with your teammates and your coach and, you know, you have a good offense around you, you succeed. And I mean, I don't know if we've only seen this success recently from Matt Stafford this year. So I don't know if it's him. I mean, we need a little bit more evidence, but he looks good.
On an unrelated note, I just Googled Matthew Stafford's age, expecting fully for him to be like 38 or something. And now I'm mildly horrified because he is not significantly older than I am. And I was about to call him ancient. So I need to check.
I looked him up earlier and I did not think that he had been in the league as long as he did. But he, I think, was his draft class like 2009? Is that right?
Yes, because he was a 2009 draft class.
Freshman in high school. What?
As a freshman in college.
He's another guy who looks young to me. I mean, I guess he looks older than Tom Brady. But Tom Brady is... I think he takes pride in his appearance.
Yeah. So moving on from quarterbacks and their alleged skincare routines. this weekend, Tia, I texted you last night that we haven't even gotten to the Buffalo Kansas City game yet. But that was, I think, the most exciting football game I've ever watched in my life. Like, that was such an incredible game. Before we get into that game in particular, just because we know that we had such a set of incredible games, shall we talk about the difference between the NFL playoffs and the college football playoffs in terms of excitement and engagement?
Yeah. So somebody tweeted, I forget who it was, but they were like, the college football playoff could never. And it's just so true. It's been so boring the last few years. I mean, I'm forgetting a close game here and there, but I feel like the championship has been, the college football championship has been boring. And it's like, I know you can't compare them really, because the NFL is the country's best against the country's best, and the players are rotating and teams are constantly changing. But in college, that you don't see that as often. The good teams have been the good teams for years. So I don't know what the solution is for the college football playoff, but like, is it the NFL model? I don't know, but it needs to change, because that I just want more of that. I want to watch that game over and over and over.
Yeah, I'm with you. And, you know, Dave and I were sitting watching the last of the games yesterday. I keep saying yesterday. We're recording this on Monday, for the record. We were watching the Bills-Chiefs game, and Dave commented, like, it's clear why the NFL is so much better than college, because the parity is there. Even the worst NFL teams are still extremely competitive.
Like, yes, exactly.
Yeah, so when you enter the playoff picture and you have the 14 best teams in the league, they are all so competitive. And you think about the difference that players, like, obviously not this weekend, but, you know, what the Titans managed to do even without Derrick Henry on their roster for most of the year. Like, they're, when we say next man up and we, like, say this at Ohio State, and yes, you know, you make the playoff and you might win a championship once in a while. Like, next man up in the NFL means you are simply on par with everyone else in the NFL, and the parity continues. And so it was just a really interesting thing to take a look at this weekend. But on that note, let's talk about the Bills-Chiefs, and in particular, how much the NFL overtime sucks and how in this one particular instance, college has it right.
Yeah, I totally agree. I cannot believe that is how that game ended. It infuriates me, like, to the point where I was just like sitting there in bed, like just fuming, specifically for Josh Allen, who I saw a tweet and it was like, Josh Allen did every single thing right in that game except call the coin correctly. That's so sad. And I saw a stat. Did I write it in here? Yeah. Since 2012, teams who have won the toss have gone 10-1. That's a problem. Like, that, you can't even, like, not even, this game aside, that is a problem.
Yep. Did you also see that after losing to the Pats in, oh crap, what was it, 2018? 27? Whenever the Chiefs lost to the Pats in the AFC title game, the Chiefs wrote a proposal to, like, the NFL officials that they should adjust the overtime rules. That proposal was declined, and we saw what happened on Sunday night. This is stupid. It's so dumb.
It has to change after that, right? I mean, it has to.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this was the most entertaining game ever. Like, Josh Allen won this game twice.
Yes. I mean, these two quarterbacks, whoever called that correctly, they were going to win. Like, that's just what happens when you have those quarterbacks on your team. So they could have flipped the coin and then Mahomes got the ball and then they could have just ended the game because we knew how that was going to turn out. We knew the result. Like,
but just like you said, it's very annoying that it ended and we know it ended because of the coin toss.
Yes, exactly.
So we could keep harping on overtime rules. One point of, like, I guess on a positive note from that game, can we talk about what a treasure Tony Romo is in the broadcast booth?
His reactions, like, I didn't know if he was going to make it. That's why I feel like I would sound like in the booth. Like, and I don't think I would get the job if I was doing that. But because he's Tony Romo, like, so funny and relatable because I was making the same noises.
He is so great. Also, shout out to Jim Nance and Tracy Wolfson, who also are part of an incredible crew. But oh my gosh, like, Tony Romo just made an incredible game that much more incredible. Before we head to the break, I have some disturbing news that Tia shared with me over the weekend. And that's that you're a Nick Saban fan now.
Okay. Fan is a strong word.
Okay.
Here's why. I don't know if this is just because of the Urban Meyer news as of late. And then, like, Dabo Swinney is annoying as hell. And it's just, you see these, like, great, quote-unquote, coaches. And then and Harbaugh, like, not that he's great, but you just see all this, like, background noise with them. And for the most part, like, Nick Saban, I have never heard anything negative about him in the media. Other than, like, I know we've talked about him being an asshole to sideline reporters and stuff like that, but he's just constantly winning. And I don't know if you saw after the championship, his post-game press conference, did you see where he stood up for his two players?
Yes.
I loved that so much. And I think he's went on that tangent before, like, not in that setting, but in other interviews where he's really behind his players. And you wouldn't expect that from Saban just because of what you hear about him and the, you know, the ship he runs. But I think he's, like, a really great coach. And I hope that stands and, you know, lasts, because I probably would have been saying that about Urban Meyer in the middle of his prime at Ohio State. But I don't know. I just kind of like him. And I'm putting him in the same boat as Tom Brady. Like, they're just really good at what they do. And I respect that. Am I big fans of them? Like, I don't know, but I respect it.
All right. I will cede you this point. I think, you know, it brings up a couple interesting thoughts. Like, first of all, you know, the comparison to Urban Meyer, like, we all know what Urban's antics have been this year. And when you make that direct comparison of, like, Nick Saban, like, pulling his two players up and lifting them up, you know, after the game and saying, like, it's not going to define them, like, they're still great players. Like, Urban Meyer would never do that. Like,
right. We
saw what he did in Jacksonville. And what he did was throw his players and his assistants under the bus repeatedly rather than shouldering any sort of blame. And he continued to do that over his time at Ohio State. I'm not sure we discussed this point specifically previously on the podcast, but, you know, after the hoodie situation was brought to light about Urban Meyer's hoodie ban, you know, Urban denied any responsibility for doing anything wrong, like sharing a picture of Trayvon Martin in a team meeting. He blamed an assistant for that after he initially denied it altogether. And it was like, hey, buddy, like, take some ownership for your team. Like, you have this role.
Like, you are the head coach. Like, it's tale as old as time. You are to blame no matter what happens under your watch. Like, and I don't know what's going on with him. I know he probably hasn't been a great person and it's just now coming out, but oh my God, he's, like, constantly in the media lately. I'm like, dude, just go to Florida and hang out in your beach house and just stay there for a little bit and stop talking to the media and stop talking to other people.
Yeah. The point of this diatribe is not to shit on Urban Meyer. I'm so sorry for taking us down this road. But I do think you bring up in kind of an important point, and that's that, like, these coaches are not role models, but it is important to admire them when they do things that should be admired. Like, Nick Saban is a good coach, and we can absolutely respect him for being a good coach. He is literally the best in the business at being a college football coach. He is untouchable at this point, with all of the records that he has set. And so, yeah, it's perfectly fair to respect him for achieving that. So you make a good point, Tia.
Thank you. I hope nothing horrible comes out about him in the next week, because I'll be real embarrassed.
There was some stuff with his daughter that one time.
Oh, wait. It's all coming back to me.
But that wasn't him. So, you know, we'll call it what it is. Anyway, we cannot talk about the NFL forever, although I think we have spent quite a bit of time today talking about the NFL. But we actually have more from Ohio State Hoops coming up shortly. But first, we're going to take a short break. So stay with us.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Okay, welcome back. So, Tia, I don't know if you've ever heard the story, but I just learned about it like Sunday, and this episode is going to come out on Tuesday, which is the 50th anniversary of one of the worst brawls in sports between the Ohio State Buckeyes men's basketball team and Minnesota. Have you ever heard of this?
No, literally never. I read it in the notes and I was like, what?
So this happened January 25th, 1972. Ohio State was playing on the road at Minnesota. An Ohio State player was on the ground after a play. A Minnesota player helped him up, kneed him in the junk, which led to an all-out brawl that sent three Ohio State players to the hospital and effectively served as a turning point in Ohio State head coach Fred Taylor's career. Like, the details are bananas. Like, the crowd got involved and, like, was hitting Ohio State players. Like, Minnesota players were attacking Ohio State players. It just sounds like absolute pandemonium.
I have never heard, like, how have I never heard about this? This seems even more violent than, like, the Woody Hayes thing.
This was significantly more violent. And, like, I don't know. They, like, this, some of the articles that I read were talking about, like, it was, the game was being televised, but, and it was being, like, obviously recorded, but there was no way to figure out everything that was happening at once because, like, so many people were, like, part of this brawl at the same time.
That is wild. And what's sad is, like, I could see that happening again. Like, I tell you what, sports just brings something out of people. Like, it is just in our blood, especially when you come from a school like Ohio State, or I mean even Minnesota for that matter. Any school in the Big Ten just has such a huge, their fan base is just have such a huge allegiance to their teams. However, sports are just games. Like, they don't technically mean anything. I know that I attach, like, my self-worth to Ohio State's performance on the football field. I just have to remind myself that everything's going to be okay, and violence is just not worth it. Even if your team loses, I promise you.
Yeah.
Or a player accidentally knees somebody, like, come on.
Well, TBD if the kneeing and the balls was intentional or not. Are we allowed to say balls?
I think so.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway. Yes, I'm not sure based on my research if the kneeing itself was unintentional, intentional, but it did inevitably lead to the sprawl. But to that end, it doesn't even need to be like big rivalries. Remember that time the Bobcat just attacked Brutus out of nowhere?
Yes. Why you gotta come for Brutus?
I'll never forgive him.
Oh my gosh.
Fortunately, on the opposite end of the spectrum of brawls, sports do have a way of bringing the world together, which is our very rough attempt at a transition to talk about the Olympics.
I can't wait. Okay, so we have the Summer Olympics and Winter Olympics back to back. Like, what is the time frame for these?
I'm just flabbergasted. Like, I mean, obviously,
is there like a lot of time in between? I haven't even like looked up the dates.
So officially, we're starting on the 4th of February. We're so close to the Summer Olympics, or excuse me, the Winter Olympics. But yeah, the Summer Olympics were literally last summer because they got pushed back due to COVID. And so we have this glorious time twice in the space of like 6 months or so.
Okay. So I'm Googling it and it says Summer Olympics will begin in July 2024. Is that not updated?
That's the next Summer Olympics.
Okay. Okay. So 2021's is occurring in 2022. That's right.
Yeah.
Which do you like better?
2020. Oh, I like Summer Olympics better, for sure. But I will get very into the figure skating, the curling, and potentially the luge.
The luge.
Is it the luge or skeleton? Or are those two different sports?
You're like speaking another language to me right now.
Wow. Let me guess. You're a Summer Olympics person.
I know the sports in Winter Olympics, but why? How do you spell
luge? I don't know. Haven't you seen Cool Runnings? Although that's bobsledding.
Oh, this one. It looks so fun. It's like extreme sledding. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Extreme sledding.
What's the one where they like brush the ice so that the little ball rolls faster?
That's curling, Tia. Come on, it's my only hope of making an Olympics. But speaking of someone who, you know, has more than hope to make Olympics, Shaun White is going for another Olympics. This is another depressing one because I also thought he was much older. He is 35, which feels old for the Olympics, but he did first compete, I think, at the age of like 18. So he has been around for a minute.
Yeah, he is someone who, like, when I Googled just to research him a little bit, it like unlocked a memory for me, like especially him with the long hair. I was like, oh yeah, this guy.
Yeah, he was like the hipster crush when I was in high school.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get it. But he, have you seen him with his short hair? Because he looks infinitely better.
I'm not disagreeing with you, Tia. As an adult woman, I do not disagree with you at all.
Oh my gosh, wait. This is just unlocking so many memories about Shaun White. Oh my gosh, I can't wait to see. I love the snowboarding. Why does it feel like the Winter Olympics has been like a decade ago?
Because we've experienced a global pandemic in between.
Oh yeah, that.
Well, we will certainly have more Olympics to talk about next week. Which is just wild. But, you know, in the interim, it wasn't just the NFL and apparently 50 years ago Ohio State that had historical events. We saw, Tia, I don't know if you had a chance to see these two incredible feats from Division I women's basketball, including the most points ever scored in a D1 women's basketball game ever from Kansas State's Ayoka Lee, who had 61 points. on a game on Sunday, very casual. But then there was Caitlin Clark from Iowa, who had, okay, two straight 30-plus point triple-doubles for the first time in Division I basketball history, so men's or women's. Oh my God, that was like a lot to get out, but yikes.
Can we note that she's a, or did you already say this? She's a sophomore?
I didn't say that. Oh yeah, Caitlin Clark is a sophomore.
What? Wait, and then you wrote in this note, she leads the NCAA in scoring, like NCAA period?
So that I'm not sure about, but there's an easy way to find out. Hold, please. Talk amongst yourselves. Yeah, she's averaging like 26 or 27 points a game, which is just really, really outstanding. And again, just as a sophomore, she is doing this. Yeah, it looks like she leads all basketball because Antoine Davis for Detroit Mercy is leading men's basketball with 24.4 points per game.
Wow.
Get it, Caitlin. So just on a fun note about Lee from Kansas State, again, 61 points, 23 for 30 shooting, 12 rebounds. So just a real casual double-double for a Sunday game. Just as a fun aside, this record had actually been set in 1987 when Long Beach State's Cindy Lee recorded 60 points in a game. Oh, that's fun. They have the same last name. That record was tied by Rachel Branham from Minnesota in 2016. So, yeah, 61 points. A lot of teams don't score 61 points in a game. I don't know if you know that, Tia. Rutgers usually doesn't. Was that mean? I'm so sorry.
Okay, wait. Adding to this women in basketball news that just came up on my feed is Jessica Cohen, am I pronouncing her name correctly, is the only female head athletic trainer in the NBA for the Portland Trailblazers. That's pretty amazing.
She's the only one?
Yeah, the only female head athletic trainer in the NBA.
I mean, I'm excited for her, but there should be more.
Like, why is that a why? Why is that a thing? Why does that position all have to be men?
I mean, I was really, I think we were all really excited. I mean, Becky Hammon obviously is like living the dream right now in Las Vegas, but like, she should have been like the head coach of Portland.
Baby steps.
Yeah. Anyway, we could talk all day about positions that women are not in that they should be in, but we've got to wrap up because we don't have all day to talk about that. Before we wrap up the show, Tia, do you have any shout outs?
Shout outs. You go first. I need to think of one.
Okay. So happy birthday and shout out to our favorite hippo, Princess Fiona. Fiona's turning 5 today, again, today being Monday, because we're recording on a Monday. She has served as an inspiration to so, so many. Her story of resilience and of the Cincinnati community coming together to support her is one that warms my heart every time I think about it. And so excited that she can be the happy, sassy hippo that we have all grown to love. So happy birthday, girlfriend.
Oh my gosh. I love Fiona. Okay.
Oh, she's so perfect. I got to meet her. Well, like not meet her, but like I got to see her once and it was magical. I felt like I met a celebrity.
I know. Like I would have freaked out. The amount of selfies I would have, she would be like a million feet in the distance. Like I can't imagine you could get that close to her.
Yeah. I mean, this morning I did share, I was deciding between Fiona's baby picture and like my selfie with Fiona, and I picked her baby picture because she's so cute.
This is so much better than the two that I have in mind, but okay. I think I'm going to shout out like as if this person is going to hear me. Patrick Mahomes, because I don't know if you saw this, but as soon as the game ended, he ran all over the place, like cameras like running after him and all these people running after him to get to Josh Allen.
Oh,
give him a hug and just like talk to him before all the other chaos commenced. And I just thought that that was super cool. And then obviously shout out to Josh Allen because, like, wow. Like, I'm not going to get into the overtime thing again, but, like, I just wish the guy had another chance. And shout out to an incredible freaking playoff run. I hope they hear this.
Tia, those are great shout outs. Don't sell yourself short. All right, that's all we have for today. As a reminder, you can follow Tia at TiaJohnston_, me at Meredith Hine, and the site at Lingrant33. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks again for listening to Play Like a Girl, and as always, go Bucks.